Morning, Boker Tov. Today's daf is Ksuvas of Ayin Tes. Ksuvas Ayin Tes. We left off at the two dots at the bottom of Ayin Ches on the base. We started the eighth parak yesterday discussing various dino of Nichsei Maluk. Again, to remind us, Nichsei Maluk are the assets that she brings into the marriage, or even if she inherits during the marriage. But she keeps the Karen, she keeps the base, so she keeps the Karka, or if it's a house, she keeps the ownership of the house. If it goes up in value, it's her benefit. If it goes down in value, it's her loss. And he gets the benefit of the payrus. While they're married, he gets the benefit of the payrus. So now we have a Gemara's going to be a story of an Isha who wanted to kind of save her asset from falling into this Nichsei Maluk situation. She essentially wanted to hide the asset from her husband. There was a woman who wanted to keep her, Tavichinu means like to chase away. She wanted to keep her properties out of the reach of her husband. Rashi explains she didn't have a husband yet. She was an almana. She had been married. She had, I don't know why it has to be an almana. It could just be a girl that inherited some assets as a single girl. Either way, same story. The bottom line is, we're talking about a woman who was slated to, she was looking in the market to get married, and she had some assets, and she didn't want those assets to be Nichsei Maluk or Nichsei Maluk. She wanted to just keep it out of the marriage totally. So what did she do? Kasvinu Levrata. So she wrote off those assets to her daughter. She wrote the assets that they should belong to the daughter. Now, she wasn't really giving it to the daughter to give it to the daughter. She was simply writing off to the daughter that it should be out of her possession on paper, that it shouldn't look like it's hers, that the husband shouldn't be able to have rights to it, to the payrus while they're married, or more importantly, to inherit it after she dies, if she predeceases the husband. Now, if you jump into the bottom Rashi, Rashi says that she actually tells Eden, the Girsa, we have Rashi, and I say the Girsa because others take issue with this, they say it has to be a wrong Girsa. Rashi says that she gives it to the daughter, second to the last line of the page of Rashi, and she lets Edom know that this matana is not a matana, and Lavriach is just there to kind of save it from the husband. Not the daughter should actually be Zaycha, not that if she becomes the amana, or meaning her husband dies, or she gets divorced, the daughter should keep it. The second she becomes amana or grusha, she should be able to take it back. It's just in order to avoid the husband's rights in this land. Taisus takes issue with Rashi. The Baam Taisus says, I don't understand. If you have Edom there, then what's the discussion? We're going to have an ensuing conversation, whether it works, whether it doesn't work, whether doing the right thing or not. So what's the conversation? If there's Edom, it's black and white clear. Rather, Taisus says, we're talking about specifically where there's no Edom over here. There's no Edom. Go into the third line, second to the last line of page now in Taisus. So the Ri says, we're talking about where she didn't say a word. She didn't say, I'm doing this in order that my husband shouldn't have rights to it, but I'm not really giving it. She didn't speak all that out. If she spoke that out, of course, that would be it wouldn't be a full matana to the daughter. It wouldn't be a question. Rather, it's a gila musabama. Why? Because they say, actually, yes. Why is it gila musa? She just gave away her stuff and didn't say why she's doing it. What's the gila musa? Or more specifically, why is it not a concern of dvarim shebelev? She didn't speak it out. It's all in her mind. So say this, we'll have dvarim shebelev. Sheinim dvarim. Why? The hachavate hadavar nikushla niskavna elav riach dinafsha adifla kemri besemach. It's pasha that she's not just giving away all her assets. People give matanas. They give some things away sometimes. But to give away substantial things, to just give it as a gift, is usually we have to look, what are the underlying reasons of what's going on. And over here we'd assume the reason why she's doing it is to avoid her husband having possession of it, but not that she really needs to give it away. So it's so strong, the umdana, that's what she's trying to do, it wouldn't even be called Vam Sholev, and it would still work. But again, we're talking about Adi Adam, and again, others say in Rashi, switch the girsa. Others say in Rashi that don't be gerus Edom, it's a mistake, because if Adam is Edom, it wouldn't even be a shayla. Okay, so again, the story was that she wrote over assets to her daughter, in Tzva Begarsha. She then got married and got divorced. Asked by Nachman. So she came from the Nachman and she wanted to take back the field from her daughter, the assets that she gave to the daughter. She wanted to take it back. The daughter showed the shtar that the mother had written her the assets and said, she gave it to me. I don't know what she's saying. She gave it to me. So he came from Rav Nachman the Shtar, Kari Rav Nachman Shtar. Rav Nachman ripped up the Shtar in order that she should get back the mother, should get back the property. So Rav Nachman ripped up the Shtar of the daughter. Also, meaning we trust the mother that's why she had given this, she gave it kind of with this stipulation, is only to avoid the husband's ability to have take possession, and therefore it wasn't really matana, and therefore the mother could take it back. So Rav Nachman ripped up the Shtar. Also, Rav Anan the Kabbat Rav Ukva. So Rav Anan went to Mar Ukva and he complained. Amalei Chazim Mar Nachman Chakla Heichi Mekar Chakla. Look at Rashi says, "Einei Baki Bedinim." I believe it's very ironic. Rav Nachman, we pass like Rav Nachman Bedinim. Rav Nachman is a Talmud Shmuel. We pass like Shmuel Bedinim. We'll come up in this Gemara as well. But Rav Nachman we pass like Rav Nachman when it comes to Halach Lemaisa. We pass like him. But I guess someone say this is either earlier on in Rav Nachman's career, or he was saying it more, he was Kavaran is Kwaitra Ukva, that looked like based on this psak, he's not someone who knows Allah, not that Chas v'Shalom, he was saying that Nachman in general doesn't know Allah. Of course he does. He was the leading daya in our Gemara. We say we paskin like Rav Nachman typically. Okay, says the Gemara, Havimar, Rav Nachman Chakloi, Heichi Mekar Chazimar, Rav Nachman Chakloi, Heichi Mekar Shtar Denshi. See, master, see, this is Rav Anan telling Marukva. See, Marukva, how Rav Nachman is ripping up shtaris of people. It's a terrible thing going on. Amar Mitleis, Marukva said to him, Emily Easy, Gufut of Dechavi. Tell me more about this story. It's actually very interesting before we go further. Total side point. But Chavetz Chaim, and Sefer Chavetz Chaim and Sefer Bermer Chaim. There aren't any Gemaras or Mishnayos dedicated to Lashon Hara. Chavetz Chaim has multiple svar, right? Right, Shkris Lashon, and Chavetz Chaim has multiple svar discussing the halachas of Shkris Lashon. And part of the way he achieves finding all the marmakayim is because he takes any place in Shas, any place where there are references that can be related to Lashon Hara, and he brings it into the halachas, halach l'maisa. So here's one of the cases he brings the halach l'maisa. How did Rav Anan goes to Rav Akva, and he says about what Rav Nachman's doing. And what does Rav Akva say? I don't want to hear it. You tell me he's ripping up shtaris. He was saying that he doesn't know halachas, he's not just ripping up shtaris. I don't want to hear it. He's talking Lashon Hara about some other Rav in a different city. No, he said, tell me the story. I need to hear exactly what's going on. Because when it comes to there's two components to this, the way I understood it. Either when it comes to halacha and learning, so of course he discussed shitas and deis and lamdas. It wasn't so much a lashon hara about actions, it was more about the halacha element, but more so, if someone comes to tell you a negative story and starts saying, maybe if you want to say, if someone comes to tell you a negative story about someone else, you say, I don't hear it before they start. But once they start, then already you could say, let me hear the exact story, because maybe there's a line of defense against that story. Two different points in this from this Gemara. Again, I'm not sure if I'm getting the chavs. Maybe you need both. Maybe it needs to be halachically related in order to dig deeper. If it's not halachically related, what's the sense of digging deeper? So it could be you need both components, but that's what I understand from this Chafetz Chaim in Be'er Mayim Chaim in Klal Yud. Okay, says the Gemara further. So he said, easy, gufut of the Hechavi. Tell me right now, what exactly happened to the story? The story was such and such. He's not making mistakes, Rav Nachman. Shtam Avrachas, comrade. You're talking about Shtam Avrachas, a shtar written to specifically keep the property away, to save it, to chase it away from the husband. So that's fine. Hacham Rav Chaniloi Bar Idi Amar Shmuel. Rav Chaniloi Idi said, name of Shmuel. Mayurahana Arani. I am a Pesach. And this is what I say. Yem Yaveh Shtam Avrachas Leyadi Ekranu. If a Shtam Avrachas comes in front of me, I'm going to tear it up. Meaning, if the woman wrote a shtar as a shtar merachas to save the property from her husband to someone, and the person who received the shtar is coming to actually collect with it and say it's theirs, I'm going to rip up their shtar, which is exactly what Rabbi Nachman did. Rabbi Nachman, you know, as a Talmud, Rabbi Nachman could have easily learned that from Shmuel himself. It's perfect. It's a correct psak. Amalei Ravel Rabbi Nachman. Time of mind, what's the reason why Shmuel would tear up such a shtar? Because there's a logic that a person wouldn't leave himself without money and give his property to others. He wouldn't leave himself, just give it away for free. People don't do that. So ask the Gemara, Hanimi Lachrini. Once we say that's the logic, maybe you say that only when he's giving it to a third party. Shmuel said it when a person gave his time to a third party. Aval Avrate Yaviyit. The people do give over big assets to their children. Maybe when it comes to a child, they would give it over as a gift without anything in return. And maybe this is a real gift over here. Afilu Hachi, Makam Brata Nafsha Adifla. Rav Nachman says no. Rav Nachman says this, or we're saying on behalf of Rav Nachman, that no, even my daughter, this idea still plays a role, because a person wouldn't give away everything and leave themselves. They wouldn't give away the whole field to the daughter and leave themselves nothing. It's one thing to give a gift, but the person still needs to take care of their own needs before, make sure they have sustenance before they give it all away to their children, and therefore we assume that it wasn't a real gift. Now before we go further, a question in the Rishonim. So we're saying now that there's this concept called the Shtar Mevrachas, and we have a source, what was this, Rav Nachman already has a source prior to it from Shmuel, that we say that it's not meant to be a real gift. So what is the status of the what rights does the Mekabel have? Let's talk in our case of the daughter. The mother gave this field to the daughter, and we're saying that it's only there to circumvent the husband from being able to get it, but it's not really a real matana, therefore the mother could take it back when she becomes a widow or divorced. She can take it back from the daughter. What rights does the Mekabel have? Does she have any rights throughout? Does she have full rights throughout? So Tesis brings that as long as the Ish is married, the Mekabel has full rights. She has full rights over the asset. She can't sell it because it's got to be around when the marriage ultimately dissolves, when they get divorced or widowed, but she has full rights to the payers. She has full rights of usage while it is while the marriage is, the mother is married. Rashi, Tesis really rich was saying opposite. The Mekabel has no rights. And meaning, even if there's peiros on this land while the mother's married, the mother's really entitled to those peiros, not the daughter. And if the daughter eats those peiros, the daughter will have to pay back the money of the peiros. The daughter really has no rights. She's really there just playing the role as part of the charade. She's just playing the role as if it belongs to her, but nothing belongs to her, and she has to give everything back to the mother. And then you have the roa who says, seemingly like this second approach, that she has no rights over the field, while the mother's married, she has the rights of the field, but Paris, in the interim, she can keep, because that's like a small fee the mother would be willing to be meichel. It's an umdra. She's willing to meichel that fee of the daughter keeping the Paris, because the daughter's helping her out with the charade, so whatever Paris the daughter eats, she won't have to pay back for those Paris. Just seemingly similar to Rashi and the Tesis Rea, the Ritva, but not with the obligation to pay the Paris. One other point is that some of the Achorim discuss that someone to say that the daughter is zeicha to the Paris, and the mother has the rights to sell it. So again, so maybe in the beginning, I was saying the Tesis says she can't sell it. Maybe according to Tesis, they take it back. According to Tesis, the Baal Tesis, maybe the daughter could even, no, it's not the Baal Tesis, it's the Tesis of here, and maybe the daughter could even sell it, but someone to say that the mother has the rights to sell, not the daughter, but the daughter has the rights to the Paris, kind of like a pshara. The daughter has the rights to Paris, but the mother owns kind of the karka and has the rights to sell it. Okay. Meaning, if you're saying that doesn't go through, if it's a fake giving over, and the husband should have rights to it. Excellent. That's the Mar's Kasha in a couple of lines. If a person wants, a woman wants, that her chasm should be kept away from her husband, what should you do? She writes again, shtar pasim, very similar idea. Shtar pasim is like a, it literally comes from the notion of pious, of like being mafias someone, appeasing someone, or persuading someone. The idea is that it's really fake. You're just writing it that shtar pasim is normally shtar pasim is, let's say, I'll write a shtar to you that says, you really own X, Y, and Z, that's by me. And the idea is that you should look to be someone that has wealth or has assets. As you know, sometimes, you know, people, when they want to do business with someone, they want to see, do they have money in the bank account? You show money in the bank account. So I write you a star or a note or something that shows that there's $100,000 of you, that's by me. It's not true. It's just there for you to appear wealthy, right? It could be assets, it could be money, whatever it may be. So if a woman wants to, it's a similar idea to shtar merachas, just a different reason for it, but same concept that it's not a real star. So a woman who wants to avoid her husband having rights to assets, she writes star pasim to others, different from shimul meal. The chamayim, no. If you write a star pasim, dangerous game, rots besachikba. The person who she writes the star to can make a joke with her, meaning could say, my deal, it's mine, I'm keeping it. You wrote me a star, I'm keeping it. Ad, sheikhtav loy mayam kshirza. Unless she writes very specifically within the gift, she writes from today and when I approve of it. From today and when I approve. So you basically make a strong stipulation that's only when I decide this gift should go into effect. Time to kasvul hachi, but it's very clear. Kort lechachamim only works when she wrote this stipulation. Halei kasvul, she doesn't write this stipulation that when I agree to it. Halei kasvul hachi, kanin lekech lekech staka kaina. So back to the question now. Shmuel, Rav Nachman are tearing up the shtar from the daughter or from whoever the recipient is, saying it's not a gashar, it's not a shtar mavrachas. Here we see the chacham saying that by shtar pasim, if you don't make a stipulation in there, it is a good gift. If the lekech doesn't want to be nice, if the lekech wants to treat it like a regular full-fledged gift, lekech, or the makabla, I should say, the makabla can do that. We kind of have been tiptoeing around this idea till now. We didn't really speak out clearly, but this is not from Mina. When she gives away all the property, then it's very clear that she didn't really want to give away a property for real. It's not a sincere gift, and therefore the recipient will not be able to keep it. But if she kept some of the property and gave away some, then why is she keeping some and giving away some? The fact that she's keeping some and only giving away some shows that the gifts are indeed a real gift. It's surprising, but it's indeed a real gift, unless she makes that stipulation. So only when she's giving away part does she have to make the tonight. That's what I'm talking about. If she gives away all, she wouldn't even have to make that tonight. Says Gemara. Surely Kasha now. Beautiful. So you're going in a circle. She's trying to put it into the daughter's rishus in order that the Baal shouldn't have rights to it. But we're not really giving it to the daughter. It's just a charade. It's just a game. She doesn't really mean to give it. Okay, then the Baal has rights to the papers. She didn't accomplish anything. And the point is, even if she's accomplishing that it's hidden, we're not getting aces out of steel. It doesn't belong. It belongs to the husband. She's literally, if it didn't work on a technical level, and the gift to the daughter is not really a gift, so it doesn't belong to the daughter, that means it belongs to the husband, the parents, and he's stealing the parents by not giving it to him. Says Lamar, no. Amar Abaye, assume ki nechasim she'en do in the Baal, we treat him like the nechasim that are not known to the Baal. If you remember the Mishnah, we had a sheet, that then the Mishnah of Shimon says that our own Mishnah was discussing differentiations between whether she gets these assets prior to Erisin, during Erisin, after Nisuin, when, depending when she sold it, we had four different scenarios of what the halacha is going to be with the various assets and when she sells them. But then we had Rav Shimon that says, it seems to make no chiluk in between when Eris and Nisuin. He says, Nechasim ha-yaduim, Nechasim the Baal know about, she cannot sell. Nechasim the Baal don't know about, then she could sell. We don't know exactly what that means. It doesn't mean a chasm that are Medina Siyam, doesn't mean a chasm that are Karka versus Metaltlin, but it says the Agamara, Abaye says that's the pshat over here in these Eitzes. We're treating these Nechasim fall into the category if she was gave it as a matana to her daughter, even if it's a kind of a fake matana, once she gave it as a matana, there's a shtar saying it belongs to the daughter, then at the very least, it's considered a chasm she'eni do the Baal does know about, and a chasm the Baal does know about, don't are Nechsei Tzemarzo or Nechsei Malug. They're not considered to be part of the Nechsei Malug at all, and therefore, it's not considered taken from the husband. And of course, Falib Yerushim going according to Yerushim in our Mishnah, who made that distinction. There's a discussion in the Rishonim, Tesis, others, what's going to be the story with a man? What will be if a man makes this type of stipulation? Let's say he has people that he owes money to, and he wants to have assets that are not considered part of, that are not considered his. He wants to kind of avoid any obligations in those assets. Would such a idea of making a star pasim or the like would have helped. And based on our Gemara's outcome here, Tais points out it shouldn't. Because only by the Isha do you have this Eitzad, this concept of Nechasim She'en Du Labal. The Baal has rights to Nechasim Malug only when he knows about it. If he doesn't know about it, he doesn't have rights. It's a Chiddush Rav Shimon. It's a din in the relationship between husband and wife. When a person, for whatever reason, is trying to mavriach his assets from a creditor or whatever it may be, they don't have that relationship of Nechasim She'en Du Ma'enim Du. They don't have that concept. And therefore, by a man, the such an idea would not work. Such an idea would only work by this Isha, not by a man. There's a concept of Shtar Pasim, but for it to actually work and take away the Shibud, or whatever it may be that husband's trying to avoid, L'chaira, that would not work. Okay.
No, just a thought. It seems very obvious to me that the payers do not go to the woman during this time, because that would go against the Kamas Chachamim. The Chachamim didn't want her to have these payers, and the Baal is looking at it and saying...
You're saying if the husband doesn't know about it, I'm not sure if it's your problem. If the husband doesn't know about it, you're saying in concept on paper, if it would be defeating the purpose. The whole idea of Nechasim Malug is that we don't want the wife to be having all these payers while he's supporting her, and it's going to cause animosity. So the chayra, just because he circumvented it, it would defeat the Enochami. I'm not sure if that's a riot that doesn't go to her, but it would definitely, your point is well taken. It would kind of a little bit defeat the purpose. Yes. Nafan Kzafan. What if a woman is married? And she's here. Nafla means fell in Yerusha, cash, money. Now, money is wonderful, but it's very dangerous in terms of how you deal with it, how you invest it. Karka is much more secure. Karka is much more, the same thing till today, right? Real estate is considered the most, I mean, there's obviously risky investments within real estate as well, but real estate in general, land, real estate is considered a safer way to maintain money than just leaving it as money. So, or just, I should say, then investing the money. So yukach from karka, the husband should buy land with the money, and he gets the payrus, and she keeps the land. So it seems to be a very simple din. You know, the halacha is, when it comes to nechsim malug, she keeps the keren, and he keeps the payrus. So what's the mishnah's chiddush? The Tosfos points out the chiddush is that you gotta go buy land right away. You can't even try to, the guy inherited, let's say she brought it into this, she inherited $1 million. And he says, you know what? I can't really buy a good piece of real estate for $1 million. I need $2 million. Let me try to turn the million into $2 million, and then I'll buy the land. So I said, really, that's part of the Chiddush of the Mishnah. That immediately you go buy land. You don't waste time with trying to do other investments. You don't actually waste time. You don't take the risk of trying to do other investments. Rather, you go right to the land. As they look, the taste is rid. So man, the more things change, the more things apparently stay the same. This is a 1,000 years ago. Okay, says the Mishnah further. Paris Tatusha by Karka. What if she inherits Paris that are Tullish from the Karka? Yukabam Karka, Vahecha Paris, same idea. Paris that are already detached from the ground. That's like movable, it's kind of like money, movable items, which will, these even more than money in the sense that if you don't use it up or sell it quickly, it'll depreciate. So what do? You convert it into Karka, the Paris itself, and then the Karka belongs to her and he eats the Paris that come out of it. What about Mechabar Makarka? What if she inherits Paris that attached to the ground? Hey, this question, because Paris Mechabar Makarka may still have a din of Karka. Summer Mayor, Shamanai Sakama Yafa Paris. We appraise the land and say, how much is this land worth with the produce on it? Bekama Yafa Blay Paris. And how much is the land worth without the produce? And that spread is the value of the Paris. Lumaiser, Yalkach Makarka, Boycha Paris. So that difference, that little spread, he has to use that money that, that value and buy karka with that value, because that's not going to be, that's not going to remain forever. That peris will get used up. Use that to buy karka, and again, she keeps the karka and eats the peris. The chamayim the karka shalai. Chamayim say no. That which is attached to the ground is his. Vatlushim a karka shalai. Any peris that are attached to the ground will taka belong to him. Meaning he's like the peris. So she inherited karka with peris. So that's peris that he gets to eat. Whereas tushim akarka, payments that were inherited already detached from the ground, that's kind of like cash that has to be converted into a karka. If tushim akarka shalah is hers, if you karka will echel payers, you convert it to karka, and then the husband will eat the payers. Rosh Hashanah, makam shefa kaicha ben kinesasa, in the place where we give an advantage to her, makam sheyafa kaichai, my bad, a place where we are miyapa his kayach, because when he takes her in by marriage, that becomes a disadvantage by the divorce. And in a case where he has a disadvantage when they get married, he'll have the advantage when they get divorced. What does that mean? Regarding parents that are attached to the ground, when he marries her, it belongs to him. It's considered his payers. He gets it because we view it as payers of the karka, and therefore he's entitled to it. Uvitsyasa, but when he divorces her, shalah, it'll go to her because this is still attached to the ground, and she gets back the ground, she'll get those payers. Whereas pollution of the karka pays that detached from the ground when she comes to the marriage, because that's the shalah, when she gets married, it's hers, and all the husband can do is convert that payers into land. And then use and eat the pears from that, which is a shalai, but the pears that are already attached to the ground, upon a divorce, he gets to keep those pears, they belong to him. Okay, says the Gemara, Pshita, Arubati. What if there's a choice to buy land, they have money, and they're buying real estate? The question is to buy land or to buy homes? Arubati, Ara. They buy land. Because land is considered overall safer or better choice. Ultimately, land lasts longer and houses depreciate. Houses go down in value. Again, what we think of our houses very often, what's going up in value is not so much that houses, is also the land. It's not the house itself. A house itself, the actual construct of the house, typically will go down in value over time. It depreciates the physical building of the house itself. The land under it may go up in value, but the physical building goes down. Therefore, land is considered more enduring. Now, there's a discussion in the Rishonim. It's actually an important detail to point out. Rashi learns that we're going both directions. It could be a case where she wants land. There could be a case where he wants land, meaning over housing. It could be both directions. It doesn't make a difference who wants what. We're saying the one who wants land wins out. Whereas the other Rishonim, again, Tosfos Rid, says no, typically it's going to be that the wife wants land and the husband wants a house. And he explains the reason why the wife wants the land is because the land is, again, it's more enduring, it lasts longer, it protects the asset better. And the husband may want to buy a house because what do you do when you buy a house? You buy an extra house, you rent it out. That's your income. He's not working the field. It's a lot more stressful, a lot more strenuous than the house. Now, the Mefarshim do point out. So again, the Tosfos is learning it's one kind of he. It's almost as if we're saying she wants land and he wants the house. Rashi says both directions. It could be either way. She could want one and he could want the other. We have no clear reason to say either one is going to want anything specific. But the bottom line is, according to both explanations, the land wins out. So some of the first they bring about the milus again. Land we spoke out. Land keeps the value, whereas houses normally will depreciate. A house. Someone is saying, again, this is a discussion, but could actually, in the short term, bring in more income. You rent the house, you can get a very nice income. Rent the house, the land, maybe between the expenses of planting and plowing, if you're doing yourself, paying workers, it brings in perhaps less income, but the house is maybe more short term because it's appreciating. And a house, of course, like we said, requires less work. Those are some of the different spheres that involve these conversations. Bottom line is, Ara wins.
Just to clarify, the bottom here is a bati with the land underneath it.
Yeah. But the point, yeah. Bati, particularly, a house or a palm tree. Bati, you buy the houses. Particularly the Ilani, one wants to buy a palm tree, and the other wants to buy some sort of general Ilan, a fruit tree. Particularly is considered more enduring, more valuable. Ilani Vigufni, what is the choice between stama fruit tree or a grapevine? Ilani, you buy the fruit trees. The more saying, which rights have the stronger rights for the purchase with the money? Abba Zardasa Upira de Kavri. What if the woman inherited a certain type of tree, some type of tree? They describe this as a tree where typically the tree is used for the wood. The fruit itself is not so valuable, and they chop it down for the wood. Or a fish pond. Amila Pera. Some say the wood of the tree and the fish of the pond are considered peiros. Amila Karna. Some say, no, that's the principle. That's the principle itself. What's the shaila? And here's a big aside. Klala demilsa gizei machlif peiros. Ain gizei machlif karna. The general rule is that, let's say, on a tree, by the trunk. If you cut down the tree and the trunk, it regenerates, it grows again. Anything you cut and grows back, like the peiros on an annual basis, the peiros we clearly know are peiros, lack of a better word, peiros. A peiros, husband has to eat the peiros, and the wife keeps the tree itself. The peiros could keep growing back. Something which when you cut off, it won't replenish, it won't grow back, that's not peiros, that becomes the keren itself. So that's why there's a shayla about these, let's say by the fish pond, these types of items, the fish pond, if you can take out fish, are you taking away the keren or the new fish that are being that the eggs that are being laid and the new fish coming out, are they considered peiros? So we're saying the klal is, if it's gizeh machlef, it's peiri. If it's engizeh machlef, it's considered keren. And the husband will not be able to take the principle. Amar b'zeir, amar b'shaya, amar b'yanei. Vramila, amar abba, amar b'shaya, amar b'yanei. Hagoynev tapav amar b'yiz. Hagoynev vlad behemoth melug. If one steals the vlad, the offspring of behemoth melug. So a woman brings in an animal to the marriage. The husband's using the animal in the field. He gets the peiros of the animal. But the woman owns the animal itself. And the animal gives birth. The animal has a vlad, and someone goes and steals that vlad. So he's got to pay kefil for the vlad. He's caught stealing red-handed. He's got to pay kefil. Who does he pay kefil to? Is the kefil going to the husband or to the wife? What's the shaila? Is the vlad considered peiros, or is the vlad itself vayter keren? Is the shearings and the work of the animal that's peiros, but the animal itself and even the vlad considered keren? Or no, the vlad itself is peiros. The vlad, the original animal, is keren, but the vlad is peiros. That's the shaila. Come on. So the psak was that it goes to the wife. The shuli kid goes to the wife, which means we consider the vlad itself keren. Kiman says, "Amar who's it go like Rabbanu Chananya? The goes nine like Rabbanu Chananya. Time when the rabbi said famous melug lebal. We looked at the rabbi said that the vlad of famous melug goes to the bal. Vlad shivcha melug leisha, whereas the vlad of the shivcha that she brings into marriage that goes to the isha, belongs to the wife. The Chananya ben Chiyashai Amar no." They both belong to the, we made them the same. The vod of the shifra is like the vod of the hema, in that the husband receives both. But either way, we're saying over here that the vod belongs to the isha, the kefil, the kefil goes to the isha because the vod belongs to the isha. Neither the chamim or chananya, even the chamim only said what belongs to the isha, the shifra's melug, the vlad belongs to the isha. But they both agree the behema, the vlad of the behema belongs to the husband. So the chara, this psak is going, Rabbi Yana's psak, is not going like any of the tanaim, afil tehema direkol. No, you can say direkol, peira tekin rabbanan, peira de peira le tekin rabbanan. Biggest side. That the rabbanu masaka for the baal, the animal, enechanami, the vlad of the animal that she brings into the marriage, the vlad melug, belongs to the baal. Why? Because it's called peiros. That's called peiros. But the kefil is not the vlad. Kefil is peir the peira. Kefil is the peiri that came from the peiri. The peiri that came from the peiri, for peiri, that taka goes to the wife, that the chachamim, late takin l'rabbanan, the rabbanan were not masakin. Here's the lashon, by the way, lies that you'd appreciate. Late takin l'rabbanan. You asked me yesterday where melug comes from. It's the takin l'rabbanan. Like we discussed, it's a chachamim, but late takin l'rabbanan, the rabbanan were not masakin the din of nechsi melug of peiri to peiri. Now, this is a very important point over here. It should not be taken out of context. Avada, we say, typically, when peiros produce, beget more peiros, avada, those peiros do belong to the baal. If you take peiros and the peiros make more peiros, avada. What if the vlad is a vlad? You tell me the vlad, the wife brings the animal to the marriage. That animal belongs to the isha, and the peiros go to the husband. The peiros, we're saying, includes the vlad. If that vlad has a subsequent vlad, that doesn't go to the husband? Is that what it's saying over here? Avada not. The first you point out, Tais points out, avada, the baby of the baby, would go to the husband. We mean ancillary peiri, like kefil. The Lashon Tosfos says, peiri that comes ma'alma. Peiri to peiri that comes ma'alma, that doesn't go to the baal. But avada, peiri to peiri, would also go to the baal. Says Gemara now. Back on that, machlokes chacham and chananya. Chacham say that the vlad of the animal goes to the husband. Vlad of the shifcha, that goes back to the wife. Chananya says, no, we treat the same. So says Gemara, we understand chananya. The vlades are considered peiros, both shifcha and behem, it's all considered peiros. What's pshat l'chamem? Bishlam l'chananya, hadal l'chashin l'misa. Really, we didn't get about the svara. We should have said this book that earlier. The Gemara explains what the svara. The svara is that the shayla is how we looking at it. Remember, we started this Gemara on the bottom of an aleph with this idea of gizeh machlev and gizeh machlev. Are you losing the base, the keren, or not? So the shayla is, how do we look at, let's start with behema. You have a behema, which means the marriage. The keren belongs to the wife for sure. Peiros say goes to the husband. The vlad behema will go to the husband. You say it's called peiros only if it's not kind of replacing the mother. But if it's replacing the mother, and why would I consider replacing the mother? The mother still exists. Because we look at it as the mother's ultimately going to die. And when the mother's going to die, the mother's going to be gone. So these offspring of the mother are kind of the replacement. So then it wouldn't belong to the husband. That would be considered like the Karen. Because every generation replaces the generation before it. You may have three vlads instead of one. But one animal that she brought at the marriage. But there'd be an idea that's replacing. So says the Gemara, according to Chananya, the idea is that sai by a woman, a shifcha, sai by a behema, we don't view the fact that the mother's ultimately going to die as if right now that the keren is being used up, and therefore the vladis belong to the husband. So he's consistent both by animals and by shifcha. Ella Rabbanan, Ichash the Misa, if they're concerned about Misa of the mother, and therefore the offspring is not considered a peiri, it's considered a replacement of the Karen. So then, Afilavad Behemoth Milgami, same story should be by Behemoth Milug as well. Vilechash the Misa, Afilavad Shechus Milgami, why are you making a distinction between the Shifcha and the Behema? Says Gemara, La'ilam Chash the Misa, Rabbanan Achash the Misa, Shana Behema, Tika Aira. Very interesting. After Behema dies, there's still usage for the Behema. When a Behema dies, you know what you can do? Use the leather. Use the hide. So that's considered the Karen, even, I mean, the Rabbanan are worried about death. And if a Shifcha, when she dies, Karen's gone. So therefore we say the child is kind of like an extension of the Karen, and it's not a Peri. But by Behema, even when the Behema dies, you can't work in the field, you can't share the wool anymore, but you know what you could do? You could use the hide. This the thing that you could benefit even from the dead animal, and therefore that's considered that Karen's always there. That's different than the Shifcha. So we make a clip between Behema and Shifcha. The first one discussed, being arrived for this Mara, it sounds like a wild Shiloh that should even exist, but it was is discussion about using the Ur of a dead Shifcha, using the Ur of the hide of a dead Shifcha. Again, it sounds pretty disgusting, but using the hide of the dead Shifcha, is it allowed? And one of the rights of being for this Gemara, clearly not. Our Gemara says, Behema, you have the Ur! Whereas Shifcha, you don't have the Ur, that they bring a riot for this Gemara, that making a belt from your Shifcha is not allowed. Okay, says the Gemara, Amar Rav Huna, Barachia Amar Shmuel. Halacha Chananya, Halacha is like Chananya, that the husband gets the rights to both the vladas of the animal and the offspring of the, well, the Chum agreed to that, but also the offspring of the Shifcha. Amar Avraham Amar Nachman. Avraham Nishmul Chananya Nishmul Zalach Chananya Mid Chananya Shem Niskarsha. Chananya is Maida that if the Shifcha, if the woman gets divorced, if the husband got the offspring of the Shifcha, and then they got divorced, Nesenes Damim Nitlasan. She can give, this is a big Yisayit, it's going to come up in a few more scenarios, she can give the money back, the value for the offspring, and take it back. Why? May Shvach Vesavia, big Yisayit, because it's considered Shvach Vesavia. There's an idea that actually comes up further in this Amud, in suing Mishnayos, that there's an idea that there's something, I don't want to say it's sentimental value, there's something that came from a house, from her family, that even if the husband has rights to it, close by the marriage, fine, he could use it, but there's a concept that she may have to pay for it to get it back, but she has rights to be able to get it back because it's, for lack of a better word, called sentimental value. It's something that belonged to Shvach of the Beis Aviyah, that's part of the assets of the father's house, and she has a right to want to bring it back. Amrav Nachman, Echnisle Eiz, Lechalva, Verachle, Gizasa, if she brought into the marriage a goat for the milk, sheep for the shearings, tanagos beisasva dekla pereisav, a hen for the eggs, or a palm tree for the fruits, aichel b'haylech ach dechla karen. The husband continue to eat it until the karen is eaten up. Meaning, we don't say that if you keep eating up all the pears from the tree, and eventually the tree gets, apparently trees also can get worn out. Surprising, but it theoretically could happen. Or the animal, we understand, you can use up the animal till it dies. We don't say that. What do you mean? If using up till it dies, you're eating the karen too. No, eating. She brings into the marriage these items for muluk purposes. We consider this. It's basically a fancy way of saying that he subscribed to Chananya. We don't view dying. We're not concerned about dying as getting rid of the principle. The animal still exists, the tree still exists, and using it till death is considered still using the payers, not using the Karen itself. Amar Nachman, Ailele Glima, what if she born in, like a shirt into the marriage? Payer Havi, the usage, the wearing of the shirt is payers. Mechasi Bevazla Adakalia, some idea. You can continue to use it till it gets used, till it gets worn out. We don't say the fact that it's getting worn out is the Karen itself. That's called the payers of this item. Kiman, who does this go like? Ki Haitan, Fangitan, and Tangimotor Baisa, Hamelech Vachel, the guy be salt and sand. That we are the wife brought into the marriage. The wife inherited these salt field or sand pits, and they're using up. You want to use the salt and the sand for various usages. How is the Paris? The usage of it is considered Paris, even though eventually it's the type of thing that will get used up. Pier shel gafris, mechfer shel tzrif, sulfur pit or like a mine with aluminum. Rameir says that's considered Karen because that will be something that gets depleted using it up. It's not Paris, it's all Karen, it is what it is, and there's no replacement. But Chamer and Paris come say, no, that's also Paris. So meaning Rav Nachman who's saying that we treat the salt pit like Paris fits like the Chamim. We say we treat these big mines of aluminum and of sulfur like Paris, the Chiddush is, even though the Charizam Chalik is a Metzias, they're both agreeing that over time it gets depleted, but that's its usage, that's considered Paris according to Chamim, and that's how Rav Nachman is passing. Rav Shimon Eimer, Makom Shev Kayach, we said in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon said whenever he has a Kayach, meaning in the beginning of the marriage, then he has a disadvantage when they get divorced, and vice versa. Rav Shimon Tanakam, what's Rav Shimon Argan Tanakam? He's just elaborating, he's speaking out, you know, a fancy dynamic that the Paris, that I consider Paris, when you come into the marriage, so when she gets divorced, she gets to take those, and vice versa. So Amarava mechubar b'shas yitzia k'minai. No, the chiddush is that which is attached at the time of the divorce. That's the chiddush. According, the Chachamim spoke out what status of the payers are, and Rav Shimon saying that such payers the woman's going to take back with the property. The Chachamim will say whatever grew while it was during the marriage has a status of payers nechsimot, even if it wasn't attached yet, is going to belong to him. That's going to be machlokes. The Chachamim, he'll be able to cut those payers off now and keep them. According to Rav Shimon, since it's still attached, it'll go back there with the field. Let's quickly, you know what? It's really time for, it's not for you to start now, time for slichas. We'll pick up Mr. again later today, Erev Shabbos. We'll have another shiur to cover Shabbos' stuff. Have a wonderful day.